As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied after
shots. Welcome to. So tell me why you mad. And that gets potable. The Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan, and I am joined as always by the kid. The God, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen. And
you had some extra drama in the
intro. I added a little bit of dramatic pause. I was channeling my inner Jim Rome there, you know, just to give it a little bit more spice. Because you know what? The last thing the Celtics did, there was no drama involved in their, what was it, a 50-point win against the Sacramento Kings, who...
53, I believe, yeah.
Absolutely, just
which is wild. Crazy.
Like they have a roster full of people who I believed to be NBA players. I know Fox wasn't playing, but sheesh, they just didn't come to play. And I think it's a good sign for the Celtics that they're beating teams they're absolutely better than. I don't know if they have done that consistently this season, but I also don't know what I can take away from a 50-point win against the Kings, just because. It's just one of those nights where it's like, oh, 6 minutes into the game, you could tell it was not going to be a game.
I mean, it was 33-7 at one point. So, yeah, at that stage, it was pretty clear it was over.
So we will not talk about the specifics of the Kings game, because obviously things are going well for the Celtics now that Marcus Smart's back. They have their full starting lineup. Jason Tatum scoring 50. They're beating teams by 50. But the kid, Jay King himself, wrote an interesting article today on The Athletic, which you should go and read right now. Or, you know, if you're lazy, you can listen to Jay and I discuss it here. But I would suggest both. But it has been the next game against the Hawks will be Ime Udoka's 50th game as a head coach. So Jay, being the journalist that he is, started asking the right questions. How's he been doing? And Jay asked a lot of people how Ime's doing. He did not ask me. But Jay, you wrote that article. I guess what were your biggest takeaways from kind of what the players thought about how Ime's been doing?
They seem to be Ime fans. Because I wondered, and I think a lot, like I've gotten texts from people who work in the league on other teams, like, Ime Udoka said what? he did that again? like guys just really surprised by his honesty and some of the things he says to the media. So I wondered how guys have adapted to that tough love, especially after Brad Stevens, who didn't operate in the same way. So I asked around and guys seem to really support Udoka, and it seems like he's obviously hard on them and he obviously is demanding of them, but the side that he of him saying all the honest things he says is not his only side. And so guys appreciate that. They also seem to appreciate that he's very consistent with what he says. Like, he doesn't blow anything out of proportion. It's just like, he tells the truth. It is what it is. And he wants the Celtics to react. And obviously there was a lot more to that story than just that. A lot of basketball stuff. The defense has been great. The offense, not so much. And I do think, obviously, there's been a learning curve for him at the end of games. But to me, the most intriguing part was how players have reacted to the criticisms, and which have really been steady. Like whenever the Celtics screw up just a little bit, you can count on Ime to be pretty upfront about it. So that was the most interesting part to me, at least when I was digging around a little bit. And I thought Grant Williams, I talked to him for a little while, and he was adamant, like, we really trust him. We have learned that he really cares for us. And he's like, those are the two things that matter as a coach, which is probably true. Like when Brad Stevens hired him, he said, you know, X's and O's are one thing, but every single person we interviewed knows the X's and O's. And so it's about, can you connect with guys? Can you get guys to buy in? And obviously that's been a real challenge, I think, especially on the offensive end, to get some of the guys with bad habits to break those and play more efficient basketball, more selfless basketball. But I think guys are trying on that end. And then defensively from day one, it's clear like Ime's pushed a lot of the right buttons.
Yeah, I mean, I make fun of him for being a hardo Ime, but I still think he falls under the Brad Stevens kind of Kaizen mental alpha. Like, I don't think he's surprising anyone, any of his players, with his criticism, because it seems like, especially from your article, that the criticisms are constant and it's not something that the players haven't already heard. And so I think a lot of people, he definitely takes a different approach than, especially a wildly different approach than Brad does in terms of engaging with the media and kind of being honest. But it feels like if he's willing, he's like going to say these things behind closed doors. And so he's willing to say it in public. And it feels like the players really respect that. Like, it didn't feel like the quotes you got were kind of the generic athlete speak of like, oh, you're asking me about my coach, I'm just going to like say polite things about him because I don't want to cause any waves. It seemed like from Grant to Jaylen Brown to Robert Williams, all of like genuinely were like, I really respect this man. And like, I know that he's there for me, which is not necessarily like a kind of like connection you expect, I think, players to have with their coach. And that was the thing that kind of stood out to me the most. And you mentioned a little bit. It was just like, there feels like a genuine, like, we care about each other, and I know that Ime cares for me, and, like, we appreciate his tough love because, like, we know that's what's going to make us better. But it definitely felt like a level beyond just, like, generic platitudes about, yeah, you know, coach is a good guy. He's hard on us, but, like, it felt like a level beyond that I think a lot of athletes don't really go to when they're, like, asked questions that could potentially be, like, scandalous in the media.
Yeah, and I think that's like, to me, the coaches that I had, and this is just personal experience, it has nothing to do with the Celtics, but the best coaches I had were the ones who could push me the most, because I knew that no matter what they said to me about basketball, it was in what they thought was my best interest. You know, like I knew they always were about the right things. And if you know a coach is about the right things, then you'll listen. And it won't matter to you that they sometimes say harsh things, you know? It won't matter to you that sometimes they'll get in your face and be pretty mean about things or whatever, because you know, like, at the end of the day, this dude really cares about me. He cares about the team more than anything. And I get the sense that players do respect him like that and think he's about that stuff. And when you think about his coaching upbringing, you know, he was in San Antonio, and Greg Popovich, like, what makes Popovich great on top of all the basketball stuff is that he minimizes the basketball stuff. You know, it's like, we're going to play as hard as we can. We're going to work as hard as we can to be the best team we can possibly be. But also, family matters. You know, what's going around in the world matters. Like, how you're feeling as a person and what you're dealing with personally matters. And so that's how Ime Udoka grew up as a coach. And, you know, that's the type of coaches he was around. So I do think that probably helped shape him a little bit. But it's also just the person he is like, he's a no-nonsense guy, like really no-nonsense. And so it's interesting. And I think, you know, basketball-wise, obviously there's been a learning curve for him as a coach. And I think that's to be expected. Like, he's a first-time head coach. Hardly any first-time head coach comes in and has a great grasp of everything. I think, like, Steve Kerr stands out as one of the exceptions who just came in and transformed the Warriors overnight. But he also had a team that was ready to...
the Splash Brothers and Draymond Green.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't like he came in and had to teach guys to be unselfish or teach guys like how to use their skills to help others, because Draymond Green and Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson, like, they'd already been through a lot and they'd already figured that stuff out by the time he got there. He just had to unleash them in a different direction. But yeah, I mean, most coaches go through a lot of stuff, and the Celtics went for Brad Stevens, who was a very good coach. No matter what you thought about the job he did last season, like, he had 8 years.
Historically, he was quite good.
Yeah. And not only, but he was really good at, like, end of game decisions. He was really good at lineup decisions most of the time. He was really good at, like, a long list of things, with the exception of maybe, like, offensive approach. Everything, he kind of ticked off a lot of boxes. And so going to a new coach, there was obviously going to be a learning curve. And I think, you know, it's easy to be hard on Udoka because the Celtics are one game over 500 and probably definitely have the talent to be better than that. But I think, like, you can already see the growth in the team and in him. So it's a start. I think that's how I ended the article. But, like, it's a start. We'll see how he ends up evolving and whether he ends up becoming, you know, a top coach in the league. But I think from a standpoint of first half of season, connecting with players, obviously the defensive identity is there. Like, there's a lot that he's done right on top of some of the end of game stuff, some of the offensive stuff. That's kind of been like a learning curve for him, I think.
Yeah, and now you make me...
He inherited a team with bad habits. Like,
he inherited a team that didn't know how to close out.
It was your turn, my turn basketball. Like, the Celtics, they've played your turn, my turn basketball. Probably even dating back to when they were really good with Gordon Hayward there, right? Like, that was part of why Gordon Hayward left, because he was like, you know what?
It wasn't my turn.
I don't want to sit here and watch Tatum and Brown and Kemba just do one-on-one things all the time. And so kind of forcing them to play a different way. And I think even that has gone reasonably. Like, Tatum, the last couple weeks, we can talk about this next, he's played some of his best basketball. Like, he wasn't hitting shots for a while. But as far as making reads and getting to the cup, like, man, he's been really good.
Oh, he's been absolutely fantastic in just terms of making the right play. The crazy cross-court pass, so he's like doubled basically two guys on him very far away from the basket, and he found, I think it was Richardson in the corner. He's been doing a very good job of just making the right play. And it feels like the Celtics offense has been a little bit better, at least in late game scenarios. They had a impressive trend going,
except against,
and going Portland. In the right direction, except for that game against Portland. I think
those were 7 minutes and 19 seconds of tough.
Yeah, but it was funny because Jared Weiss wrote an article, I think it was published that morning, that was like all about the trends in the Celtics fourth quarter offense and how about it was all getting better, and then they dropped that. But they have generally, if we were going to say that Portland game's an outlier, and I guess that speaks to the adjustment period and kind of what Ime has done as a coach. You've talked about late game struggles and just generally improving the offense. And I guess I'm curious from your perspective is do you think he's done a good job adjusting? And what do you think his biggest adjustments have been in terms of trying to get this team to in a better shape to try to, break those bad habits that Brad Stevens left him with?
I don't have the numbers on this.
Go based on eye test and feel alone, man.
Yeah, eye test, it feels like they're putting Jason Tatum in pick and roll situations a lot more. And I think that's really beneficial. I think the more you can put him in the pick and roll, the better. Because when he's running pick and roll, that's when he's at his best getting to the hoop. And I think he's evolved a lot as a decision maker. And he's making a lot of the right plays. Even if you watch the end of that Portland game, he made a lot of the right reads. And they ended up going to a lot of the guys that were wide open. And they just missed. And that's going to happen sometimes. But I think the more they can put him in pick and rolls, the better it is for their offense. And then I think getting healthy matters too. Their starting lineup has been really, really good all season long. And it hasn't played together often. But when those guys play together, they've been really dominant. They've been the best five-man unit among units with, high minute. I forget what the minute allotment is the limit there. But they've been the best among lineup. I think it was 150 minutes or more. And then, having Marcus Smart out there, I do feel like he organizes the offense better and guys are in better places. And then there's been an emphasis lately from Udoka to start actually running in transition. they should not be an awful transition team. They have been an awful transition team. And I think the Kings game, obviously it was an outlier game because the Kings were just pathetic. I'm not sure I've ever seen a team that bad in an NBA game, but they were kicking the ball ahead and really making the Kings pay in transition. You haven't seen that a lot from these Celtics. Their transition numbers are awful. So if they can even become average in transition, that's a big step for them.
Yeah, and it's weird because they're in this kind of holding pattern where you don't know. The trade deadline is coming up. I know I'm looking forward to a Dennis trade. I don't know if it's going to happen. I think B-Rob wrote today about kind of why financially it might make more sense for the Celtics to hold on to Dennis at least until the offseason. Because I think something to do with that old salary cap thing people are always talking about. John Hollinger wrote on The Athletic that he thinks the most likely deal is the Celtics just dealing Bruno Fernando to get under the luxury tax, which if they made the deal to get rid of Wancho.
Huge deal.
It's going to be huge, but that feels like if they made the deal for Wancho to just get under towards that line, Bruno Fernando is probably, we're going to miss our short time with him. I still think he might have done a better job than Ennis, but at this rate, we'll never know. But I feel like I've seen things all over the place where the angrier fans are we got to sell, tank everything away. I think I saw a lot of that after the Portland game. I've seen other people saying, you can't give that message to the young guys and just sell off all the, or to Jalen and Jason and sell off all these pieces when they're they still feel like they're playing good basketball. So I have no idea what the Celtics are going to do, but it's they have a chance to be better and kind of perform well and close down the stretch, but it's still tough in the Eastern Conference. I'm just looking at the standings. They're in eighth place right now. They're four games out of the 76ers, who are in sixth place. I just checked the standings today. When the hell did the Miami Heat become the best team in the Eastern Conference?
They've just quietly been winning games without like any of their key players healthy. It's crazy what Spoelstra
has done. I hate Heat culture. I hate it so much because it's so effective.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Max Strus shooting 40%+ from three. Like, Duncan Robinson has been bad. Jimmy or hasn't made shots at the level he's used to. Jimmy Butler has missed a lot of time. Bam Adebayo has missed a lot of time. And still, the Heat are number one in the Eastern Conference. It makes very little sense. But Spoelstra is a wizard. And they're a lot deeper than I think people thought. And that's a scary team come playoff time.
They just invent new guys. Like, where did Omar Yurtseven come
Max
from?
Max Strus was not
No,
invented.
I know who Max Strus is.
Very briefly on the Celtics roster.
I'm talking about Omar Yurtseven. Where'd that guy come from?
Yeah, he might be invented. He was invented in the Heat culture laboratory.
He just was like, we needed some guy with like very small body fat, and he's going to be athletic and almost 7 feet tall and just be effective. It just doesn't really make sense. I can't be, I'm going to be honest, hand up. I haven't watched a lot of Heat games this year.
They're fun to watch. You should watch them.
Maybe I will, Jay. Maybe I will. But it's like, I looked at their record. They're 8-2 in their last 10. And I'm just like, I saw they've been like steadily in the top of the Eastern Conference for most of the season, but just like that recent rise to first place has also been shocking. The other thing that's...
If you had to guess, when do you think Omer Yurtseven became a professional basketball player?
Well, with a name like Omer Yurtseven and the type of question, the way you asked it, I'm going to guess 2 years ago? 2019.
Wikipedia says he played for Fenerbahce in 2013, but he's 23 years old now, so that makes no sense.
Maybe he was just because he is 6'11". Maybe he just was like, you're very tall. You're on, you're a professional now.
No, he played in the, it says he played in the EuroLeague in 2015, which is crazy. In 2015, when he was, that was seven. So he was like,
he would have been 16 years old. Yeah.
He had 8 points and 7 rebounds against the Nets in a preseason game.
How come no one has told us about Yurtseven until now? This is BS that he's just making an impact now. I feel like with all the draft experts, Kevin O'Connor, it's on him for me not knowing about Yurtseven. It's frankly ridiculous where like how the Heat are able to just pick up the guys, especially in contrast with like the Celtics' repeated failures to develop any role players. And it's just like, oh, we can get a 21-year-old who's been playing basketball for 6 years and just make him into a guy. But somehow the Celtics have multiple first-round draft picks.
I swear someone in the Heat organization just went on Wikipedia and made that shit up.
Make him sound more legit?
After they just invented him. Yeah, there's no way he was 16 years old having 8 points and 7 rebounds against the Nets in a preseason game, and we haven't heard about this.
Are we sure this isn't a Danny Alamonte situation where he's like really, he's 29 years old or something? Like this, he just...
I mean, he did play at NC State and Georgetown.
So. Yeah, because the NCAA has always been scrupulous about following the rules. The other thing that surprised me about the Eastern Conference is like the Cavs got out to this wildly great start and then suffered some like the Sexton injury, the Rubio injury, and just like they haven't slowed down at all. They're playing four guys who are above 6'8" and Darius Garland. Again, I'm going to turn to you because you are much more of an NBA consumer than I am. How the hell are they still doing this?
Their defense is awesome. Evan Mobley's a joke. Him and Jared Allen are just, they engulf you at the back line. And then they just kind of have a belief, it seems like.
Oh, they believe in winning. They just have a bunch of players.
They're one of those teams that no matter how things are going, whether they're up a lot, whether they're down a lot, whether they're on the road, whether they lose two of their best guards to season-ending injuries, like it just doesn't matter. They're just they just play the same way and keep plugging away and keep doing the same thing. So, and Kevin Love is low key good.
Well, I saw that the other day. He gave like the Knicks like 20-10 and like was the key guy for victory. I was like, since when has Kevin Love been able to do anything on a basketball court? Nothing makes sense anymore.
Kevin Love is low key good again. And JB Bickerstaff has to be one of the Coach of the Year finalists.
Just say he's Coach of the Year.
Lauri Markkanen, which makes no sense. Like, you should not be starting Lauri Markkanen at small forward, and it works. It's just impossible, but they do it. And somehow it makes sense. They're fun to watch too, just because like they really have very little scoring talent whatsoever. But they just do the right things. And Darius Garland is awesome. He's fun to watch. You gotta watch you I can't believe you haven't watched a lot of the Cavs or Heat this year. They're two of the best teams to watch.
It's almost like I've started this new venture in my life that takes up a lot of my time and ability to watch other basketball games.
Little thing called law school.
Yeah, maybe. So that's why I rely on you, Jay, because you have to tell me what the hell's going on out there, and you keep me informed. I am just a mere fan. You are a professional journalist. Thus, the
I love that we really just had a segment where you just asked me to tell you what's going on. With two of the best teams in the Eastern Conference.
I think it's a pretty good segment. I think we should keep doing it. I'm going to keep going. What the hell's going on with James Harden and the Nets? I saw a report that the Sixers were like, we're holding out Ben Simmons because we want to trade for James Harden. I was like, James Harden's not going to leave the Nets. He just like demanded a trade there. And then I saw a story the next day that was like, James Harden hates living in Brooklyn and didn't know that New York has taxes. Like, what?
I don't know about the tax thing, but I do think there's got to be some mental toll when you think you're going to Brooklyn and playing on a superpower, and all of a sudden Kyrie's like, I'm not really going to play basketball this year, guys, you know? And so Harden went there, and he thought they were going to be just spectacular and crushing everybody. And then all of a sudden, he and KD were forced to play like 40 minutes each to drag a team to wins that doesn't really have much of a supporting cast, doesn't really have much in the way of defense, and Kyrie was just sitting at home for a while. So I would probably be frustrated too. I don't know if I would want to get traded to Philly, which also has taxes. I do think that it would probably be a pretty frustrating situation in Brooklyn.
But it's not like they're bad.
Thanks in some part to Kyrie.
They still get him for road games. I mean, it's obviously going to be harder with Kevin Durant injured right now. But the net, it's not like they're like wildly underperforming expectations. I guess they're haven't done as well since KD's gone down, and that's why they're in fourth place right now. But I don't know. It just feels like what is James Harden just never going to be happy? Like he forced his way to Brooklyn to like kind of be in this situation. Is he going to like be happy, I guess, sharing the limelight with Embiid? I don't know. Also,
well, think about it. Before that, he and Chris Paul were not on good terms.
And before that, him and Dwight Howard weren't on good terms.
Yeah. So when you ask, will he ever be happy? Like there's a possibility. No, it could just be his thing.
That's I guess, the whole precedent about what James Harden is. All right. And I'm going to round.
You know who is happy?
Who?
Jason Tatum when he plays with Robert
Williams. Nice segue out of the Jam Ask Jay about the Eastern Conference. Yeah, what is up with that? I feel like they've been playing with each other for 3 or 4 years now, but all of a sudden, like the last month, it's just been like Jason Tatum, Rob Williams, love each other. Big fans of each other.
Bromance.
Like, what has caused the bromance to blossom?
Well, one of my brothers reached out to me and was wondering if Jason Tatum was trying to make sure that the Celtics like kept Robert Williams or make sure that they played him all the time during crunch time. And I just think it was Jason Tatum genuinely just wanting to say that he loves playing with Robert Williams. Like, this is not the first time he's done that. He did it last year. There was one point in the season, I think he said Robert Williams was his favorite player to play with. And so this is not a new thing. This is Jason Tatum is a huge fan of playing alongside Robert Williams. And I think it's easy to see why. Like, Robert Williams sets screen. He hustles.
Vertical spacing.
He makes things easier on Jason Tatum because he's a threat at the rim. He's totally unselfish. Like, he does not care about ever touching the ball. He literally never, ever touches a ball in the post. Like, how many big men are totally cool with never, ever, ever getting the ball in post-ups? But he doesn't care. When he doesn't get shots, he's still going to play defense. He's still going to rebound.
I think Robert Williams doesn't like getting the ball because he's the quickest. Like, he's always looking to pass. I think he's sometimes not selfish enough and like looking to get his own points because I think he's always pass first. And like anytime he gets the ball, he's looking to make the right play. And it makes sense why Tatum likes playing with him. In his 50-point game, got to give credit to Tom Westerholm for doing this, but he did a recap of Tatum's 31 first half points where Tatum had 11 field goals. And of those 11, 10, Time Lord either was the passer, set him up, or was the guy setting the screen to like get Tatum the space to operate. And so it makes sense that Jason Tatum just like enjoys playing with Robert Williams just because he's like makes his life so much easier. And Jason Tatum this year and last year has been kind of plagued by surrounding players who just don't make his job easier. And so I'm sure that any guy who's just like makes the scoring for Jason Tatum that much easier, Tatum is a big fan of.
Yeah. Yeah. And Robert Williams does that. He might be, is he the most selfless player on the Celtics?
Absolutely. He's never looking to get his. He's like, he's just going up for lobs, like taking shit for when even like the Celtics throw him bad lobs. Like player, like I think he said this the other day. He's like, they're just like, oh, you should have had that one. And he just like laughs it off. But he's always looking to pass, just cleaning up other guys' buckets on the offensive glass and is just playing hard the entire time. I can't think of a guy who's like more looking to get his teammates involved or doing other things for his teammates than Robert Williams.
Has anyone changed their like image more than Robert Williams from like the first week he was with the Celtics till now? That first summer league, I cannot describe like how bad shape he was in. Like he couldn't even run out to set screen. Like it was pretty bleak that first summer league. And since then he's just like gotten in great shape. He plays a ton of more minutes now. And he's become a much more complete defender, much more focused defender. And the Celtics, like, they use him a lot of the time off the big man, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, he does a lot of, like, weak side help of, like, if once the guy gets beat, he's the guy coming over. I feel like he does a great job of timing his jumps there. And it's like you would but he's also, like, I was just thinking, like, against Julius Randle, whereas, like, he can be up against, like, the kind of bigger wings and he's not necessarily, like, the low post defender. He's kind of off ball or kind of and just in different, they put him in different positions. So I think it's the luxury of also having both him and Al Horford out there.
Yeah, like they'll put him, they had him on Kentavious Caldwell-Pope when they played the Wizards. Like they'll just throw him out there on wings. And he's good enough to help, but also because he's such a freak and because he has such good instincts and reflexes, like he can help and then still recover and block your three-pointer. Like It's been fun to watch how they use him because it's different from how he was used in the past. Like in the past, he was basically like most of the time, at least a drop pick and roll defender and always a center. And now it's like, oh, cool. Robert Williams can guard threes. You know, it's like, it's pretty impressive. And for him to come from a guy who was like just totally lost in pick and roll coverage to now being a super versatile big man who can guard bigs, or he guarded Tobias Harris when they played the Sixers. It's like, okay, that's different. That dude is different.
And I think he deserves, like, he has missed some games this season, I think 11 so far, but has been a lot sturdier than he has been in the past. And I think that was the biggest criticism of him.
And some of those were with COVID.
Yeah. But he went from playing basically 19 minutes a game to playing basically 30 this year. And I think it's been a pretty, I don't know the exact numbers, but I would assume the on-off stats would support that he's been quite good and impactful for the Celtics. And it feels like they definitely, in any game they don't have Robert Williams, it's his absence is definitely noticed. One, because you have to play in his canter more, which that's never fun. But like he has an offensive rating this year of, or the Celtics do when he's on the court, of 143 points per 100 possessions. That's wild. Like, he just completely makes their offense that much better. And I don't know anyone else on the roster who's just like, I mean, obviously Jason Tatum, but like, just in terms of the impact that he has, it's just, there's such a better team when he's out there. And it feels like he's of like really part of the young core now. And I know I think we've described the team as having a core four of him, Jason, Jaylen, and Marcus Smart. But if you were to talk to me about like untouchables in terms of a trade, I feel like it'd be Jaylen, Jason, and Robert Williams. Like, I feel like he's such a cornerstone and such a valuable piece just because having a two-way center in this league, I think, is like one of the most valuable positions you can have. And I think he's kind of played his way into being a guy who's like, you would have to give up get a lot in return if you were to give up Robert Williams at this point. And I definitely think he's like, if you're talking about trade value in the classic old like Bill Simmons trade value column, I think he's like the third most trade value on the Celtics, which is not something I would have necessarily said to begin the season.
Yeah, and assuming he can stay healthy, if he's playing 30 minutes a night and producing the way he has, and like that contract extension is going to look really good. Oh, yeah. Like, that is going to be really good value. Now, obviously, he has to prove he can continue doing this and continue being durable and all that. But I think this year, he's shown good strides on that front. Just playing 30 minutes a night and staying out of foul trouble. And like I said, like, he's a guy who for a while, he would make blocks and highlight plays and stuff like that, and steals too. But defense, like, he was very leaky defensively. And that has changed. Robert Williams just locked in. It's been fun to watch him evolve.
Is this a wildly biased thing to say, or just a little bit biased? Is he a sneaky most improved candidate, or is that just he just like doesn't have the stats to do that? But like, it does feel like has made kind of a leap this year.
Oh, well, I do think he's made it, but the biggest improvement he's made is probably just like, he's on the court more.
So the best availability or the best ability is availability, and he's made big improvements in that ability, logically, via the transitive property, he would see one of the most improved players in the NBA.
You just brought up the transitive
property. I'm not just a law student, man. I can do mathematics as well. Yeah, transitive property. Classic case, post hoc ergo propter hoc, my friend.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Just a little Latin in there, logical fallacies. All right, it seems like we've gotten a bit loopy. I think it's a perfect time if anyone else here in the live room wants to chime in, wants to hop on stage with us, we can answer questions about pretty much anything.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know what? We haven't had enough dumb trade proposals. I saw people today, mostly our friend Stool Greedy, talking about a Norm Powell trade. That seems wildly unrealistic, but like, I feel like we're 2 weeks out of the trade deadline and I haven't heard any wild suggestions. So if you got any crazy trade ideas or just questions or things you want us to talk about, please hop on. Oh, Gavin.
You can hear me, yeah?
Yes, we can.
So my question is, what is your view on the two J's, Jalen and Jason, and their future together? Will they be able to coexist?
Yeah, I think they can coexist. I think they've proven it in the past with the right supporting cast. I think them becoming, transforming from probably like, what were they, second and third on the team 2 years ago, or second and fourth, or whatever it was, first and fourth, whatever it was. Like, now they're 1-2, and I think that's different. And I think that there has been a process for them to learn the responsibilities of being the number one and the number two. I think that as bumpy as this year has been, it will help them long term. I think that the Celtics have probably learned more about what those guys need around them in a supporting cast. And I think shooting is one of those things that they've learned. Probably more passing too. But yeah, I think, you know, the most valuable thing probably in the NBA right now is versatility. And those guys have a lot of it. And so, yeah, I think you can build around them. But at the same time, like, until at least one of them becomes a top 10 player, it's also very difficult to win big without a top 10 guy. So maybe Tatum will become that. Maybe Brown will. I think Tatum has a better chance, but maybe Brown will. And if one of them can do that and the other one can continue growing, then, yeah, the Celtics will have a chance to be really, really good sometime in the not-so-distant future.
I love that you just gave a four-minute answer to can the Jays be good together? I also like that Gavin only wanted your response on it, so I will not provide my response of whether or not I think the Jays will go together. Instead, I'll give Kyle C. another chance. Kyle C., come on down. You're the next contestant on Anything Is Potable.
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Good. I kid you not, the button when you get called up to the stage moves. The unmute button. So it like shrinks and it goes from being two buttons to three buttons and it moves. So as I hit the unmute
button.
Are you
sure you're not just like on drugs?
I am 100% positive I'm on drugs. I'm off drugs, excuse me. So my question is I love the combination of Smart, Rob, and the Jays being like our core four. I feel like that is like an elite defensive unit. I feel like it hasn't really reached its potential yet, but I'm wondering who or what kind of player do you think is like the perfect fit to join those guys? And why is it Joe Ingles as the perfect trade target?
Ooh, a little Joe Ingles speculation.
See, one of my brothers is obsessed with getting Joe Ingles on the Celtics. Maybe more than one of my brothers.
Keith Smith mentioned him as like a...
Oh, no. I messed up and I pressed the button. That's my bad, Kyle.
You just got rid of Kyle?
It was an accident. I didn't realize he kept talking and then...
Because he may or may not be on drugs.
If he was on drugs, I would have kept it on. Kicked him off because he suggested Joe Ingles, and I think that's an awful idea. That guy has...
My thing with Joe Ingles, I think Joe Ingles, like, if he were younger, he'd be a perfect fit.
He is old. He has lost a step.
He has. He's still really good, but I because of the age, I don't think he's the right fit for the Celtics. If you're going to build around those guys, like, the thing that could really differentiate you is the defense. And so... I don't know, someone like OG Anunoby? Like, that wouldn't be way too outlandish to acquire at some point, probably not soon, but something like that where he would help the offense, you'd have an awesome, awesome defense, and you hope that Tatum and Brown evolve to the place where you'd have enough playmaking to something like that.
Yeah, I think it's
what would be your pick, Packard?
OG's a good guy. I'm a little bit concerned about their size there. It has to be like, my immediate thought was Marcus Morris, but I just don't know if he necessarily fits in exactly what they do. But I do like his combination of size and 3-point shooting.
And just for the media?
Like, yeah, just for that alone, I think it would be the entertainment factor, the kind of toughness factor. The thing that's interesting to me is that Grant Williams has like kind of been very solid in that role. And Grant Williams has certainly played himself just with his 3-point shooting, has raised his ceiling a lot. I can't remember the last time I was able to like check out how many minutes that 5-man lineup has actually been able to play, but it's way less than I thought. And I don't know, like, obviously I think there's better players out there than Grant Williams, but if he's going to continue to shoot 40% from three and move his feet on defense and be kind of a physical person, I think there's potential for him to just like, you might not need to go out and get a guy. I think he has potential to grow into that role, but obviously I don't think he's like the ideal person just because his offense isn't consistent enough. And he's at a point where teams are just not guarding him. So even though he's shooting 40% from three, it's just like, doesn't have the same effect, but I feel like he has a chance to be pretty good.
So you're saying that Brad Stevens should never make another acquisition? He should just roll it forward?
No, he can trade all the other guys. Josh Richardson can get traded.
Bring Sam Hauser up from the G League.
Sam Hauser's lighting up the G League.
And that's it. He is.
But no, so with Grant and the core four, they've only played 5 games and 29 minutes, but they have a net rating of 25.6. Like, that is very good. I feel like that backs up my point that Grant Williams could be the guy there and like has a potential to kind of like compliment everyone that nicely there. Also, Grant Williams doesn't need the ball. He fulfills the role of just guy who can play defense, can switch onto a lot of things and hang out in the corner and make threes. I feel like he's a decent playmaker. I don't know. I like Grant Williams. I think he's doing well this year. I think he's like done a lot to improve his game, and I think he deserves some credit for that. Maybe it wasn't the answer Kyle was looking for, but I don't know if you trust that guy because he said he was on drugs. 1,000% he said he was on drugs.
He did. He
confirmed. Did. All right, we're going to go to Tom S.
My man was just seeing buttons floating in the app.
Tom.
Oh, yeah, we're all right.
We're good. How are you doing, Tommy?
Good, thank you, mate. Well, that Trailblazer game, since I last spoke to you, that was mouthwatering, that one. My question for you guys is, obviously, we're starting to see a lot of mock drafts now, and I know we don't really know where we'll be, but obviously, Jay King's the man. Obviously, thinking about where we'll be in the draft, who do you like available? I know ESPN said that we'll probably be looking at, like, Jaden Hardy and people like that. Chet Holmgren would be amazing, but we're not going to get number one pick, I don't think. But I'm interested in what you guys think.
Wow. I wasn't anticipating a draft
question, but I love it.
At this point of the season. I also love it. So the Celtics, they'll be like middle of the first round probably. Who would be good for them? Is Patrick Baldwin going to slip? He can shoot. He can really shoot. I love that there's a guy named Nikola
Jovic. I was about to say, I'm looking at Tankathon right now, and I was like, that's my top pick, Nikola Jovic.
I like Harrison Ingram a lot. He's got a lot of game. I think he'll maybe even be a better NBA player than he is a college player because he has so much versatility, and he's a strong, like, athletic, big wing. So he's definitely way up there for me if the Celtics are in the middle of the first round. I watch a lot of college basketball, but I haven't like thought about where guys will fall yet, if that makes sense. So I'm not exactly sure who will be around the Celtics place in the draft, but those are some names that I'd be interested in if I were there.
I mean, I think it's fairly obvious that they're going to go with Jabari Walker, combo forward out of Colorado. I mean, he's averaging 18 and 12 this year, size, shooting. As someone who watches a lot of college basketball, I just feel like he fits in exactly with what kind of like that.
You have no clue what Jabari Walker is.
I have not watched 1 minute of college basketball this year. I just looked at tall forwards on Tankathon and saw that he was a late round, first round pick. So you're right. I going back, I like Nikola Jovic, 6'10" small forward out of Mega Burmix, Mega B-Max. That's my kind of guy. He's only 18.6 years old.
18.6 years old.
That's how they have it on Tankathon. But wow, was not expecting a draft question, but like that we got a draft question. Tom, you might be giving June a run for his money as top celebrity caller. Tom brings the heat every time and brings the energy. Plus, he gets credit for the accent. Every time the accent gets me.
It's just a great accent. Just, if I had that accent, I would be 98% more cool.
That is true, because you are not very cool right now. Let's go to Michael M. Oh, man. No. Sorry. Guess who popped on right when I criticized maybe his top spot. We got to go to June right now for his retort. June, I'm sorry. I didn't want to challenge you, but we gotta keep you humble here. You got to keep bringing the heat. I'm like Ime Udoka. I have expectations. I expect my top players to perform at a top level at all times. Thank you for being accountable.
June, do you also have like three buttons floating in the air when we call on you?
There are three buttons, but the mute sign is pretty clear. It's like bright green. So I don't know what the other dude is talking about, but maybe he's having a great time. He should hook me up with his dealer or something. Man. But today there was a report from Jake Fisher. I don't know if you guys read it, that said, Marcus Smart's name's out there, but they're going to ask for a lot for him. And the other Celtics tidbits were like, they're trying to trade Schroeder. They might, you're trying to trade Nesmith. They want to get under the tax. They're shopping Al Horford, but like, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot of takers. But just generally on trade season, I guess Jay. Also, Jay, how come you never report on anything? Do you have sources, man? Like, give us the goods. But do you have any idea on like what type of player they're like looking for in a potential Al Horford deal? Because I mean, I love Al, but like actually getting his salary involved would like open up a lot of opportunities, because you could potentially trade Al Horford and take back like 22, 23 million and still stay under the tax. So if you want any meaningful changes for this season, his salary is like the one you got to move.
Before you go, Jay, I just got to say June has kept his top spot. He came with the heat.
June's always in the top
spot. He came with the heat. He made fun of Kyle for being on drugs. He made fun of you for not having enough sources. It was a fantastic call. But go ahead, Jay, proceed.
Yeah, Brad Stevens told me the Celtics would like shooting.
Ooh.
I just had
dropping the direct source, not anonymous sources. The president of basketball operations.
No, I would say obviously shooting is going to be a need for them. I do think the luxury tax is going to come into play. I do think they will look to get under the luxury tax. I do think that's one area that they'll focus on at the deadline. The Horford thing, like, he's been pretty good for them. He's been part of some awesome defensive lineups. He's allowed them to not play Enes Kanter much. And when Horford's out or when Robert Williams is out, then you can see the front court depth is not very good. So he's pretty important to them. I do think that if you can move that salary, which is an interesting contract because it basically like splits in half next season. Only half of it is guaranteed.
They would have to cut him next year to like get rid of that salary though, right? Like they wouldn't they can't. If he's on the team for the all of next season, that salary becomes guaranteed and it counts against the cap.
Yeah, I think the more likely scenario is that the Celtics stay pretty quiet at the deadline, get under the tax. I do think there would be a benefit to seeing how this team plays with a run of good health, because the way the starters have played, it's intriguing. And obviously Horford is probably not in the long-term plans just because of his age and how young some of the key players are. But like, as you're trying to learn how to build around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and what they need around them, then I think, you know, seeing more of how they look in a lineup like that could help you determine what you need. And maybe you do need, you know, a bigger guy who can play four and be versatile and help that defense be awesome. Maybe you don't. Maybe you need more shooting and more dynamic offensive play. So we'll see. I don't think it will be a super crazy trade deadline, though. I really don't think that they're going to do a ton to change the team right now. I think in all likelihood, bigger changes will come over the summer.
I think really the biggest question is, like, do they trade Schroeder to get like a better look at Peyton Pritchard? Because I feel like it's very hard to play both of those guys. And if you like want to give Pritchard a serious chance to kind of play around Jason Tatum and have kind of the option or just like a opportunity to kind of develop around the players, the starters, I just don't think you can do it with Dennis Schroeder on the roster. And so I don't think there's like a world where they get a lot for Dennis Schroeder. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. I also, there's like not that many teams that are really, I think, looking to add him. With all the times I've said blame Dennis this year and things like that, Dennis Schroeder playing 20 minutes a game is like a lot more manageable. And I think he's a lot more useful there. It's just kind of like a purely playing the role of spark plug. And you're right. If they just can have some health and everything kind of shifts down and you play 20 to 25 minutes of Richardson, 15 to 10 minutes of Schroeder, some Grant Williams, you have like a pretty solid 8-man rotation that I think the word intriguing was apt, Jay. I think you are a wordsmith of sorts.
Yeah, and the Schroeder thing will be really interesting at the deadline too, because I do think that they're interested in seeing Pritchard on the court more and they want to see what he does with more minutes. And it's just really tough for him to get on the court when they're fully healthy. It's really tough for Nesmith, for Langford to get on the court when they're fully healthy. And I don't know how much worse they'd be, if much at all, if Pritchard is playing Schroeder's minutes, if Nesmith or Langford is playing most of Josh Richardson's minutes. So that's another area to watch at the deadline, is whether they'll try to get younger and clear up minutes for guys whose paths have been kind of blocked by veterans so far this season.
Maybe they'll get some second round picks that they can use to move up to get Nikola Jovic. Who knows?
Does June live in Boston? I feel like we got to meet June.
I'm sure he'll tell us on the next podcast, but yeah, we should absolutely do that.
June may have to become a co-host, honestly. June really is better at this than we are. June, do you have sources?
All right.
I feel like he probably
June, does. Do you have sources?
We definitely need some more June on the podcast.
All right. Next time we're in LA, June, we're hitting you up. We're crashing on your couch. Well, no, Jay, I'll be crashing on your couch. The Athletic pays for Jay to travel.
I do not have that kind of pull. It's just
they have pretty standard part of his job.
Unfortunately, that has nothing to do with any status. But yeah.
Yeah, New York Times has yet to pay for any of my travel. But you know what? We'll get there. Right now, we're going to go to the last caller of the show because we've been talking for almost an hour now. Michael M., who's been waiting a while. Michael, thank you for waiting. What's going on? Did you get tripped up by the mute button?
His buttons must be floating, man.
Yeah.
Oh, there he is.
I want to say, I agree. Grant Williams needs more time, like you were saying, Jam. And I want to see what they can get for Enes Freedom, if anything. Even if we attach him with a Schroeder contract, we can get under the tax. If any team wants a big like him. Also, Jalen and Jason could definitely play together. I mean, we don't need to talk about that anymore.
I'm glad you said it, Michael, because I didn't want to be rude. But yes, I would genuinely agree. I don't think any team wants Enes Freedom. Maybe Tillman Fertitta will take him because that guy seems to reportedly like Freedom. But I don't know. I don't know where else Enes has any value in the NBA. Jay?
I'll just let that hang.
All right. Is deafening silence potable?
Yes.
Yeah, anything's potable.